Hello everyone and welcome to this webinar. I'm Francis Seeley from GlobalNet 21 and a local group called Info Climate Action Forum. And today we're going to talk about whistleblowing. Now, whistleblowing is an interesting idea which has been developing over the years, where people in an organization who can't get their message out have a vehicle to do it. And we're lucky today because we've got Andrew Samuels with us. Now, he's the group CEO of Whistleport, I hope I pronounced it right. And our whistleports, I've left out the H, haven't I? Whistleport. And he has set up a company to help people engage in whistleblowing, both within the company and externally as well. And that's what we're going to talk about today. So, Andrew, thank you for joining us. And can we start by you just telling us very, very briefly a little bit about yourself?
Absolutely. So firstly, thanks for having me on the show. And a little about myself. So like a lot of people in the whistleblowing space, I got here accidentally. I don't think anybody, you know, so growing up and thinking I'd like to be a firefighter or I'd like to be a pilot or a doctor, nobody sort of thinks I'm going to be involved in whistleblowing. But my background into this this interesting world is that having run large-scale programs and projects over the years, I found myself over the last decade and a half working for banks in the compliance space. And in that period of time, I found myself getting more and more involved in helping set up whistleblowing programs. Now, I was at Barclays in about 2015, 2016, 2017, around the time we set up the program there that eventually prevented Jess Staley from unmasking a whistleblower. Not once, but twice. All of this is in the public domain, and it led to the board having to self-report Jess Staley to the Financial Conduct Authority. I think what we realised that we had then was a system that genuinely prevented retaliation, you know, for whistleblowers, because that's one of the big concerns that whistleblowers have. So based upon that background, I established my own whistleblowing company, and that's how we've come to be here today.
And did you have a passion for whistleblowing, or did you come onto it by accident?
Absolutely by accident. I think, like a lot of whistleblowers, a lot of people don't realise they've become whistleblowers until long after the fact. They're just somebody that's identified some wrongdoing, and being a good person, they've raised their concern, only to find out, you know, there's potential consequences, or to have been informed, actually, we need to use the whistleblowing channel for this. My road in was slightly different. I just found myself going from running business programs to running compliance programs to starting to specialize in whistleblowing programs. So it was a bit of an accidental career path. But at the same time, it's been one that, as I've got to understand it more and more and got more and more involved in both the business side, but probably the operational side, helping on the academic side a bit there as well, I found it quite a fascinating role, especially how it ties into today's ESG agendas. How it ties into sustainable business, how it can be used for, you know, in the situations we're talking about today, you know, preventing environmental harm and other types of wrongdoing as well.
I mean, we're assuming that everyone knows what whistleblowing is, and I'm sure a lot of people do, but maybe you could give a better description of whistleblowing than my very amateur one at the beginning.
Absolutely. So I think one of the challenges with whistleblowing is I think a lot of people think they know what it is. Whistleblowing at its very basic form is it's speaking up if somebody suspects or has a concern that wrongdoing is taking place. Now, whistleblowing doesn't have to be anonymous. It can be done publicly. It can be done in confidence. Under UK legislation, we talk about PIDA. It's generally classified as something that's raised that's in the public interest and needs to be known about. So there's different tests. There's always grey areas in law around this, but generally a whistleblower is somebody that's got a concern that there's wrongdoing taking place and they want to report that because they hope that the right thing will be done with that.
So is your aim to create corporate trust and transparency? Because that's a tough job, isn't it?
It is, but it shouldn't be. So one of the things that I've learned over the years in doing this is it's very easy to make the ethical argument for having, you know, a good business. And there's a lot of organizations that are talking about the right things. You know, people talking about ethics, people are talking about governance and compliance. We talk about the economic benefits as well, which I don't think a lot of people talk about in this space. because actually one of the things I'm really passionate about, one of the things I want to help promote with whistleblowing, is that ethical organisations, organisations that listen to their people and want to identify wrongdoing before it becomes an issue, will be the ones that succeed economically and sustainably over a long period of time as well. And that's a message I'm really keen to push. It's not just because it's the right thing to do. That's not always the call to action. It's just the truth. But actually, there's economic benefits. So if you're an investor and you're looking for that proper green investment, look for whistleblowing. Look at, you know, are we listening to our people? Can we identify the wrongdoing that's taking place? Do we really care? Will we do something, or are we just trying to greenwash or push us under the covers?
I mean, you're talking about companies there, but whistleblowing can apply, can't it, to statutory authorities as well, like local government?
Absolutely. So the great thing about whistleblowing, and I've been involved over the last 4 years in creating the new International Standards Organization standard for whistleblowing. And one of the things about ISO 37002, as it's come to be known, and it's a standard for everything, is that it's applicable to organisations of all sectors and all sizes. I think, you know, living here in Britain, living in the UK, we're all more than aware of the need for people to be able to report wrongdoing, whether that's in local authorities, whether that's nationally as well. There's a need for that within organisations, and there's an obligation for them to identify wrongdoing and listen to people who raise their concerns as well.
Some people might say, for example, with a local authority, it's not like a corporation which is only accountable to a small audience of stakeholders. They're accountable to the general public and they don't need whistleblowing because they have the ballot box. How do you respond to that?
I think that's a terrible response, very frankly. You are responsible to the people that voted for you. You're responsible for the people that haven't voted for you. You're responsible on a daily basis and not once every 4 or 5 years when people go to the polls. You're not just talking about how our taxpayer money is spent. You're responsible for the quality of life and the quality of care and the quality of service in the area and the constituency that you represent. And if you genuinely don't care about what's happening on your watch, you genuinely don't want to listen to people who raise concerns, then you're not fit for government.
Okay, so you set up whistleblowing, don't you, both internally and externally. Tell us about how you do it within an authority, for example. How do you structure a system, work with an organisation so their employees can whistleblow internally without any action taken against them?
So I think the key thing, there's a couple of things to understand. The first one is that from an operational perspective, whether it's government or whether it's private sector, the operational principles will remain the same. So first and foremost, you have to have the tone from the top. You have to have the support from your senior leadership in the organisation. It's no good saying we'll listen to your concern and not doing something about it. The need and the want need to be there from the people at the top to enable that. You need to have a policy. And a policy needs to be better than just a piece of paper that people don't read as well. It needs to be supported by the operational aspects. And this is where we start to get into the specialized part around whistleblowing. So a lot of firms will have a channel to report a concern, but that's kind of like having a very fast car without a driver's license or the right tires or the right petrol. You're likely to drive it into a brick wall and hurt yourself. There's more to it than that as well. So you need to have secure gateways and reporting channels. But where a lot of firms fall down is you need to know what to do with the information when it comes to you as well. This is part of what we call the triage process. It's a medical term to help identify who needs help most and most effectively. But we extend this in whistleblowing as well, because it's not just about identifying the nature of the concern that's been raised and how urgent it is that we deal with it. But we also look at ways that we can protect the whistleblower. You know, it might be if the person's anonymous or known in confidence. It doesn't matter. We've got to put controls in place to make sure that they're protected from any form of detriment or retaliation, along with the subjects of the concerns, because people are innocent until proven guilty. We don't find there's very many malicious whistleblowers, but we do find, you know, about 30 to 40% of cases get substantiated. So 60 to 70% don't. You need to also, via that triage process, protect the people that have been the subject of that concern. And we've got controls and tools that we apply to these organisations so that they can do it in a very objective and risk-based way that helps to protect the people who've raised the concern, the subjects of the concern, and the organisation itself. It's a genuine win-win situation.
But, you know, if a company says, as they often do, or statutory authority, what benefits, can you quantify what benefits are we getting out of whistleblowing? How would you answer that?
So we would start to look at the numbers that are out there right now. So, and I'm happy to share this with your listeners offline if that's available as well. We use a lot of statistics from, so the Association of Certified Fraud Examiners, for example. So 43% of internal fraud that gets identified via whistleblowing channels, and it tends to get identified 6 months earlier. The average cost of fraud is $1.5 million. So right there, you've got a saving. From George Washington University, a study that was conducted in 2017, they found that organizations with effective whistleblowing programs on average had a 2.8% increase in their return on assets. So whilst this might not necessarily sound very sexy, if a statutory authority's got, you know, £1 million, you know, worth of assets, then, you know, we've got another, if my maths is good, £28,000 of taxpayers' money that we can use to benefit the people in our area, the people that we support.
I mean, in order to help a local authority, statutory authorities, companies, you have a membership, don't you, that provides all the tools, templates and guidelines that are needed to establish, run and improve whistleblowing programs. Is that something that applies across the board to all types of organizations?
Yeah, absolutely. So again, everything that we've built and everything that we offer is done in line with ISO 37002. So it can be used for organizations of all sizes and shapes. We provide everything that you need for an effective whistleblowing program. So a lot of organizations might have a policy and they might have some reporting channels, but we also provide the training for leadership and the training for staff via learning management system templates that they can use, communications tools. We've got the triage tools that we mentioned before. We've got investigations, terms of reference. We have an annual health check tool and a survey. So there's many others within there as well. But effectively, it's everything that you need to set up, run and improve your whistleblowing program. And we do have people who can consult and help if you do need the individual help from our experts as well in that space.
Okay, so we've been talking about whistleblowing internally. Now, you know, what if a company doesn't want to know? What if, you know, they want to keep secret what they're doing? How can you help people whistleblow externally?
So that's a more difficult question there. Sometimes a game teacher, sometimes gamekeeper, and sometimes your gamekeeper turned poacher as well. First and foremost, you know, we would ask people that are considering to speak out externally to really understand the risks that are involved to them. In doing that as well. There are charities to help and support that. We've seen a lot of situations where, you know, organizations will try and go after people if they're raising their concerns via that. So step number one is absolutely come and ask us for advice and support. We'll probably send you in the direction of the correct authorities, be that the Financial Conduct Authority or the Quality Care Commission. There's a lot of different organizations out there for reporting wrongdoing to regulators. We always urge caution if you're looking to go to the media. Big organizations in particular, organizations with budget, can tie you down for a long, long time. Be very careful how you raise your concerns. We've seen it within the NHS, for example. We talk about, you know, government-funded bodies. There's so many examples of where whistleblowers have suffered great detriment. So happy for people to come to us and ask for advice. I will generally point you in the right direction, but we'll also give you some advice just how to protect yourself as well. Because if you do have concerns, you know, and you feel they are in the public interest, they do need to be voiced. You do need to be careful as well. So we're happy to provide that offline as well.
I mean, you have a reporting gateway, don't you, EQS, that provides a channel for whistleblowing. I mean, can anyone use that? Any organisation, a local authority, for example?
We set that up for local authorities as well, yes. So we make those tools available. And again, it's a very cost-effective way for these organisations to be able to get these reports coming through to them. So yeah, if they would like that, please get in touch with us and we'll help you to set that up and make sure that you do have those safe channels for reporting.
But one of the things you've just said, I think, is really important, and that is, you know, if you whistleblow externally, you may think you're putting yourself at risk, and often you are. So it's not just providing a gateway, is it? It's providing a support mechanism or a support environment as well. And are you able to do that?
We'll provide the direction for the places that are best able to do that for organisations. So there are charities out there that support whistleblowers, and behind the channels with our publicity, we support a couple of whistleblowing charities as well. just who do provide that ongoing advice and support. We're a small organisation. So, you know, what we try and do is partner with people that can help in the wellbeing space, or, you know, again, we'd ask people to come to us, not because we'll be the ones directly providing support, but we'll find the most appropriate place for you to go so you can raise those concerns or potentially get the support that you need.
I mean, do you look upon yourself in terms of, say, local government as one of the tools that's important to go beyond the ballot box for democracy, that democracy is more than the ballot box?
Absolutely. So, I mean, yeah, everyone's got a different idea of what democracy is. People like to say that everyone has a voice and every voice should be listened to. Now, that sounds good. And we you know, often live in times of virtue signaling where people say that. Whistleblowing done well actually does give people a voice. So if you're genuinely concerned with something and you can voice that concern, then surely that's helping to support democracy as well. You know, we supposedly live in an open and tolerant society. And I think, you know, local authorities should be setting the example in that space as well. You know, not, and again, we'll say it's not just from the ethical side or the moral side, that should speak for itself. There's also the economic benefits. I mean, you know, if they don't want to do it because it's the right thing to do, do it because there's something in it for you as well. You know, we'll quite happily say that. But actually, the results will probably help you at the next ballot box as well if you're spending your money and providing more and better services to your people.
Well, they may not see it that way. Local authorities are often, you know, controlled by political parties, and there is always a bias for them, whatever their party is, to give out good news. Bad news is something they want to hide or ignore. So is whistleblowing an important ingredient to open accountability, to try and break open all the news so you just don't get a biased piece of information?
Yeah, absolutely. So, okay, so, you know, we've just lost another prime minister this week, you know, and I think, you know, to lose one is careless, to lose two is clumsy, to paraphrase that statement there. And this isn't about being a left-wing or a right-wing kind of solution, but there's something here that if people had been able to speak up about any of those incidents that have been happening, if the right controls were in place to have done something with that, you know, there might have just been one party instead of several parties, which led to Partygate. So many things could have been managed and hopefully remediated earlier. I don't want to say covered up, because sooner or later, if things do get covered up, as we've seen, it comes out. We live in a day of social media. And if the Prime Minister can't keep things a secret that he's done from wrongdoing, then, you know, I think it's quite arrogant of a local, you know, authority to think that they're going to be any better at sweeping that under the rug. You know, bad news always comes back to the surface. So don't let that bad news happen. You know, find out if something's happening early in the day and deal with it and defend your people and protect your organisation at the same time in doing that, because it will come back to bite you.
I mean, many local authorities have some really fantastic officers, and they sometimes are in doubt about the information that's going out on pollution, waste, recycling and so on, that it's not always accurate or there is hidden material. And they, you know, they're pressured to keep that hidden. They're pressured to collaborate only with those groups that support the party that's in power, whatever the colour, the party colour doesn't matter. Now, sometimes that can create amongst officers an atmosphere of fear. Now, how easy is it for officers to whistleblow in that situation? How do you sort of encourage them to do it?
Okay, so I guess there's the two types of organisations. It's probably almost a sliding door scenario if we want to look at it that way. The good organisation will encourage people to speak up, and there will be a level of impartiality built into the reporting channel so that if your line manager is bullying you or pressuring you to do the wrong thing, that you can report safely and anonymously or, you know, confidentially through the reporting hotline that your organisation has in place, and something will be done. That's the good organisation. They'll deal with it, and hopefully the air will remain clean, the water remain clean in that area. Then you've got the other organisations that maybe, you know, it's more systematic from the top down, in which case this is where you need to find the right agencies, the right, you know, governing bodies to go to. So, you know, it might be that you have to go to, you know, an environment agency. You might need to go to, you know, your local member of parliament. You know, now, again, people can ask us and we can signpost you into the right direction for being able to do that. I always caution, I think I said it earlier, the media should be a last resort, because one of the things that bad organizations do is they won't play by the rules and they won't play fair. And, you know, the justice system will get it right in the end, but you've got to go through that. And organizations will tie you down for a long time in litigation and court cases. You know, you can stand accused of leaking information that went against your HR contract or force you into non-disclosure agreements that they'll then accuse you of violating. So be very careful, be smart, read your policy, you know, and understand the policy before making that decision. Absolutely ask us if you've got any concerns, and we'll point you in that right direction to the right authority that you can use there, prescribed bodies. There's a lot of prescribed bodies under the Public Interest Disclosure Act that you can go to. So, you know, we're happy to help in that direction too.
So you have the sort of network of organisations that you can tap into, and you can get people who want to whistleblow to tap into. You provide that advice. You sort of navigate for them where they can go. You don't just deal with it yourself. You encompass the whole of the industry.
Yeah, we try and give that to the right people. Our main focus at Whistleport is we're trying to help organisations that want to do the right thing. I think this is where we probably differ from a lot of organisations that are in the whistleblowing space. There's a lot of organisations that help whistleblowers who've had some form of retaliation. What we're trying to do is we're trying to focus on being the prevention rather than the cure. But at the same time, we acknowledge that that's not always the case. And so we're more than happy to help people who have a concern or have a concern about raising a concern, but we'll point them in the right direction for organisations that have that bigger infrastructure on that side to be able to help them.
Okay, so if, say, an officer in local government wanted a whistleblow for whatever reason, how would they go about it?
So step one would be to look at their whistleblowing policy. Hopefully, if it's a good whistleblowing program that the organisation's got, they'll have been made aware of where the whistleblowing policy is. They'll have had some form of training and communication about that as well. So they can look at what their options are and the channels that are available and the support that's available to them from within their own organisation before deciding to do that. If they're still not comfortable, again, a good organisation will signpost you to an external, you know, charity or support network, you know, that will also be able to provide you for support and guidance there. To be able to do that. So step one is look at your own internal channels. Also, one other point I'd make on that is if you are considering doing that, if you're going to talk to somebody, as soon as you've spoken to somebody about your concern, you can't really be anonymous anymore. And I think people miss that point on occasions as well. Being anonymous doesn't impact an organization's ability to conduct a project a whistleblowing investigation. So, you know, organizations shouldn't discourage it, but you have to be aware that if you've told one person, or if you've even raised your concern, you know, to, you know, your lunch, you know, you, who you have lunch with, then you're really not going to be anonymous at some point within there. So just think about who you talk to, maybe seek some external counsel. Again, feel free to send an email to us and we can signpost you into the right direction.
Is that by the time they get to you, they may have talked to someone because they're so uptight about a particular issue. How can you help them then when, you know, their anonymity, as you said, is not guaranteed?
Yeah, that's a tough one there, because we have seen a lot of cases such as, you know, the situation with Dr. Chris Stay, for example, where he's been tied down in massively expensive litigation, you know, court costs there to try and resolve the situation. You know, you need a good support network. You need good family and friends around where that's possible as well. In good whistleblowing, an organisation will provide, you know, well-being. They'll have a HR department that can help or signpost you in the right direction. In a bad organisation, you know, you've got charities such as Protect that can go out there and help you, for example, and provide that additional support that's there. But, you know, it would be wrong of me to say that it's going to be easy. It's not going to be easy. I don't want to discourage people from raising their concerns. But what I would do is encourage them to be smart and to do their homework and absolutely reach out to us and have a confidential conversation. Happy to do that. We can talk about ways that you can potentially protect your identity and ways that you can, you know, get in touch with the right people to support you on that. But if you're really not comfortable, if you really think you're working for an organization that's likely to take some form of retaliation against you, be very smart, because you know, we always say that if you walk through a green light and get run over by the bus, you may have been right, but you're still run over by the bus. You know, and first and foremost, you've got to look out for your health and your well-being on that front. So, you know, to the listeners that are maybe thinking about doing this, you've got to be smart, you know, and there's people like us that can help you or point you into the right direction as well, but don't be hasty.
You mentioned the last thing you should do is go to the media, to go to the public domain, but sometimes you have to. You're in a situation where you get to that, and some of the most successful whistleblowing examples that happen where people have gone to the public domain, not always, but sometimes. I mean, can you help them manage that, or do you put them onto someone else?
Again, we'll find the right people to help work through that as well. You know, every situation is going to be different depending on the nature. So, you know, we've worked with people who've, you know, blown whistle on anything from, you know, financial wrongdoing to medical wrongdoing, and there's different channels available for that. You know, one of the things is that I've also heard journalists before say, you know, we can guarantee your safety and we can guarantee your protection. And again, I urge caution on that one. You know, come and speak to us and we'll find the right people for you. But there's never a one size fits all. You know, it's not about disappointing people. It's about being, you know, open and transparent about this. You know, even for the people who have, you know, gone to the media and there's been a successful outcome, that successful outcome can take quite a bit of time to get there. And it can be divisive sometimes as well, and it will have an impact upon your life. So you just need to find the right way of doing that, keeping in mind that you can work with the media and be an anonymous source as well. So, you know, again, just think through how much, you know, do you want to be known? How much do you really want your life to be kind of, you know, potentially uprooted for 6 months or 12 months or 3 years? You know, some of these things can take some time. Happy to talk about it and happy to try and find the right people to help you on that front. So it's unique to your concern.
Okay, so are you in an expanding business? I mean, is there an increasing number of people want to whistleblow? Have you experienced that?
Yeah, I mean, we've experienced an increasing number of organisations that want to set up whistleblowing programs. We're small as an organization, but we've expanded quite quickly. So we've now got an office looking after Europe down in Brussels, got a South American office based out of Costa Rica, and we've got an operation for Canada running out of Calgary at the moment as well. Now in Europe in particular, one of the things that we're seeing is the new EU directive means that organizations of 250 or more people need to have a whistleblowing program. That's being extended to organizations of 50 or more. We're also starting to see as part of the ESG agenda that organizations are starting to get beyond the, we say we want to listen to our people, to they're starting to see the benefits of doing that as well. Now, this is a slow shift, but we are seeing that. We are seeing an uptake in that. And we're starting to talk to investor groups as well that want to invest in ethical organizations and want organizations to be profitable and be profitable in the right way as well. And one of the ways of doing that is to see, have they got a successful whistleblowing program already operating? So, you know, the tide is turning very slowly, in much the same way that health and safety 30 years ago was maybe seen as an inconvenience. Today, it's baked into organizational culture. And we can see whistleblowing is starting to head that way, as something that was tolerated or done because it had to be, to something that organizations are now absolutely using as a first line of defense from a risk model.
Okay, so we've sort of come to the end of our 30 minutes. If a company or an organization or indeed an individual wanted to find out more about what you do, have access to your services, who would they contact and where would they go?
So they can come to our website, www.whistleport.com, which is WISLPORT, because we couldn't get the H in there for some reason. And we're also info@whistleport.com if people would like to email or get in touch with us that way as well. You know, if you really want to get in touch anonymously, that's fine. You can create a Bob Smith at email account and send that off to us and do it that way. We're still happy to have a chat and see what we can do to point you in the right direction. And for organizations that want to get in touch, because we're more interested in the prevention than the cure, what I would say is that we're probably the most cost-effective first line defense model that you can get in your organization. So if you're an SME, you know, for less than the price of a subscription to an annual newspaper, we can give you all the tools and templates that you need to run a whistleblowing program.
Okay, well, that's quite an offer, and I'm sure you'll get some take up. I mean, thank you for doing that, because I think whistleblowing is it's really important. And we did a House of Commons meeting years ago with the national organization whose name I forgot that deals with whistleblowing. And I mean, that's an NCO, it's not an NGO, it's not a business, but you know, this has been developing for some time, and I think a lot of people will be really interested in knowing what you said, how you go about it. The fact that companies can do it individually and it helps their company future, it gives benefits to them, but also to individuals who want to do it themselves, with all that caveat of caution you've mentioned, which is really important, so they and their family are not put at risk. So, you know, thank you for doing this. I think it's been really interesting, and I think a lot of people will have learned a lot about it, and they will know where to go now if they want to take action. So thank you.
Thank you.
We'll end this interview now.